All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to us on the recording. Back for another hour, the final hour of the event. So thank you for sticking around to the very end. I was expecting the beer cart to roll in, perhaps, but maybe that's afterwards. So looks like several of you were here in the last session. It's a quick intro again. If anybody is new, Brian Shires, Senior Product Manager based in Redmond. Spend my days thinking, probably nights too, thinking about Office 365 deployment. Today's session is going to be Office 365 Pro Plus. So we'll go deep now into how do we think about deploying Office 365 Pro Plus. So how do we, I'll a little compare and contrast that to kind of the legacy or the stuff you probably know today, an MSI install. So we'll look at how it differs. Look a little bit about the licensing model, but then talk most of the time about, okay, so I'm going to do Pro Plus. How am I? What's that actually look like? How does that architecture, how does it flow within? How does that installer really work? And then how can I go get it and move it into my managed deployment environment? And then the last few minutes, time permitting, we'll spend as much time as we can talking about Office telemetry and how we can use it to manage Office. So that, let's go ahead and get going. What's been a lot of time, the last session we covered off kind of what Pro Plus is, but first and foremost, we had a question right afterwards was, hey, there's some concern that you talked about your streaming Office from the cloud. Does that mean it's only working when I'm connected to the internet? The answer is no. It's the full version of Office installed on the local device, on the PC. It's cache, so I go offline. It doesn't matter. It's all going to continue to work. But it's just a different way of delivering it to them, updating it, that programs to the users. It's based on application virtualization, so that means we get the nice benefit of enabling side-by-side installation without you needing to take additional work to probably set up terminal services or RDS to do that. So natively, if I have Office 2010 or Office 2003, whatever it may be, Office Pro Plus is going to be able to be installed without removing, without upsetting that existing install. Now, we do take over when we put Pro Plus on. It takes the default file type association for the Office files, and it's your default Office version. We'll spend the next few minutes looking at side-by-side, but it's a great way to be able to start kind of with that reduced risk, right? I still have my old Office there. If something doesn't work, if I actually find an issue, I still have old Excel there. I can go fire it up. Sure, I have to go open the old Excel and open the file, but very rarely can get to that. Other important piece of this is the change in the licensing model. We've always been device-based, so MSI, volume license is device-based. Office Pro Plus, the service, is user-based. So what that means is that for every user I put in the service, I can service up to 5 PCs or Macs. And that we don't care if that's 2 or 5 work PCs, a Mac in there, or even if they take it home. So it actually kind of answers the question of a home use program. Sure, users can take this home. It's an employee benefit. They can get started with this. As you've seen some companies talk about, starting at home, let them learn it at home. It's a benefit to them before they actually bring it in the enterprise as well. And then because it's cloud connected, part of the service, it's not only for activation, we're actually giving you some additional benefits of that, and that's at some of the pieces we talked about, roaming settings with the user. So my recently used files, where I left off in the files, not roaming the files themselves, I'm roaming the pointers to those files. So if they're saved in an online or a HTTP location, we believe that it's appropriate to roam that and say, hey, when you've gone to this other device, here's the pointer to it. We won't roam things that point to, see my documents. Like, well, that won't be any good to roam. We won't take that. We'll take the things that point to online resources and roam those around for you. The other nice thing it roams for you is the your dictionary. So I don't have to worry about trying to move that around myself. Like, I add it. I shouldn't have to add it in each and every PC. Just stuff that works the way it should and any kind of customization I do to Office. It's still, while it's an online streamed service, we still, from day one, knew we had to make sure that IT had a way to do automated managed support and deployment of this thing. So I'll first show you the portal-based install. what it kind of looks like if I were to go home and do this. But then we'll spend the time looking at, okay, well, that's all good and well. How do you actually take that package and put it into my own deployment tool, which is, you know, kind of manage that deployment. And then also we'll spend a few minutes talking about then how do you manage updates, because it's not WSUS. It's a different approach. So I have to look at how that update model looks. And then from a management perspective, how I manage a thing, in short, it's group policy, right? While it's a virtualized package, we respect group policy. Group policy for Office applies to Pro Plus, so that's really how you're going to manage it, how you're going to be able to control what they can do. And then telemetry support is a new feature in Office to then actually be able to give you some eyeballs onto how things are working, what people are using, and how things are progressing, both to help you through that upgrade cycle. Hey, here's what I need to test. Here's how my pilot users are using. But then as an ongoing status, we believe this is an important tool for you to know, hey, this is how much Office use there actually is. Here's the list of add-ins. Here's the list of add-ins, not only that are being used, but how long they take to load. You'll be able to get some visibility into those things. So quickly start off as, yes, there's still two Office installation options. So I want to kind of dispel this. You can still purchase Office volume license on an EA the way you're used to doing it, right? And that's still MSI. But that means you're device-based. You don't have side-by-side install, all the stuff you're used to hearing us talk about for the last couple releases. So that all still exists. That actually has a version number. So this is like our naming craziness, as some people have pointed to me. When I'm talking about volume license product, it's Office Professional Plus 2013. It's specific version. You know, it'll be revved when we do the next release. But important piece is when I go to 365, well, it's a service that changes. There's not a specific release. So thus, Pro Plus has, it's minus the version number. Technically, we do have a version number behind it, but won't be marketed. It's you know, the point of I'm on the service and we just continually push you updates. There's not even, you know, there won't be a service pack for it. It'll just be continually updated. And so that's an important piece to realize there. So this whole world over here, you know, all this is just the volume license and all the old rules apply, which, you know, that's great. You can still do that. And there's cases where that is what we need you to do. If you need to do Windows to go, RDS, you're going to use the old MSI installation, point blank. That's the way that we service those. For kind of everything else, 365 is what we want you to consider. We think you're going to get a lot more benefits out of it. So one, it's built on the AppV infrastructure. So we did investments in 2010 with our AppV Softricity friends. And we've taken that and said, well, that was pretty difficult for our users. You know, it has an expectation that you have a whole AppV infrastructure. We need to make sure that we can take the goodness of what we learned there and bring it to the masses without having additional expectations. So it's, you know, user-based, subscription-based, with, you know, user up to 5 devices, side-by-side. I can install it on virtual machines, so there's some confusion out there, I think, that exists. Like, you can't put a Pro Plus on a virtual machine. I can. I can put it on a dedicated machine. It has to be user device. If I want to do RDS scenario, we actually need you to use volume license, because you think of what's going to happen to that machine getting multiple entry points to it. So different approach there, but I can have a virtual machine and I can put Pro Plus on it, but not in an RDS scenario. So enough about that. Let's look at how this actually works from an AppV perspective, because it's all built on that. I love that animation. I'm done with it. So past application virtualization, how many used or tried to do Office 2010 and AppV, or maybe even earlier, AppV 4.6? Anybody in here? If not, I'll just thank you. You won't be mad at me then. Past application virtualization, we had like kind of one little bitty block that said it what it was, and then everything else came at once. I mean, when I patched it, I patched an entire 800-plus megabyte thing, and that stunk, right? It didn't allow local XE integration, so a lot of external products couldn't talk to us. And never mind the fact of how hard it was to actually build that package. So we set off in the Pro Plus approach and said, number one, we got to have a better way to service this thing. We need to have a matrix of all the components, not even at an application level, but like little building blocks within the applications, and be able to stream those down independently and reconstitute them. One, it lets us to install more quickly, and two, it also allows us then our update method that we're going to be able to use to say, well, only this piece of Excel changed, so just give them this. Don't give them the entire application. So how we load it initially is that approach, and it also helps us from a future update perspective. The other important piece, we solve for the local app integration. So in the past, if you did an application virtualization at v4.6, would have created this crazy little Q drive, and nobody went, what the heck is that thing? And it's totally off in hidden land. Other applications had no idea that Office even existed. So we had to say, hey, Office, we want it virtualized, but we need it to be discoverable by other applications. It needs to be able to go look for where everybody expects Excel.exe to be, and if SAP's trying to call it, they're going to be able to find the thing. So we've actually solved that problem, and we can expose that up. But still keeping the nice side-by-side support, so we're not going into the deep registry hive and hijacking things. And enabling you to be able to persist. So let's have a look at a side-by-side install. And let's I'm going to preface this with I'm crossing my fingers. We just uninstalled Office off this guy from our last demo, and I only had a few minutes to reset here. So on this PC, Surface, all right, that's pretty cool. Look here, I don't have any Office on here anymore. If I go search, where did I get WordPad? That's not what I want. So how do I get it on here? So this is the portal-based installs, where I'm going to probably start piloting from. So what I've done up to this point is I've signed up for a 365 service. In this case, I've signed up for an E3 service, meaning kind of everything. I can sign up for a Office Pro Plus only subscription. So it is possible to have Office 365 and only this Pro Plus piece. So it's certainly an option for you. I'm going to go ahead and go to the desktop. I've already signed in. So this user, I've signed up for the service. I've created my user and said, hey, this is how you get into the service. This user has come into Office 365 and gone into the Software Center. And this user has a couple things. This user is actually already installed in a few machines. So this point of, hey, each user is kind of in control of their own installs. They can see them. I can, as an IT, push this out for people. But the kind of final act of signing in is always a user-driven thing. So they can actually keep track of these. They can deactivate them. Just a quick note there. If I go past that 5 limit, what happens? We hear that question a lot. 6 machine comes along. I install it. It installs, they go sign in, and it goes, hey, you already have 5. It'll present them with a list of 5 machines they already have and ask them, hey, which one do you want to knock off the list? Immediately deactivates that and lets you continue on to the next one. So it makes it easy. Hey, if I sent my computer off to college or university with my kid and forgot to take it off of there, I can easily deactivate that, whatever the scenario may be. Let's go ahead and get the install started. So the user sees here, hey, this is what I get. Come back and talk about some of these other options in a second once this is up and going. So they're going to get a prompt. This user needs to be an admin, local admin. So to do a self-based install, got to be a local admin. So maybe why we need the other options we'll talk about. So I'm just going to run this. Going to give you a C prompt. And away it goes. And kind of if you look up here, right now it's just getting started. Essentially, what we've done is set up a little bootstrapper that says, hey, what product do I want? You're going to get all these products. I can't go in and say, oh, I only want Word and PowerPoint and Link. No, you get the entire package. You get the full 365 Pro Plus suite, no picking individual components. Pick my language, so I can pick my language. And so we highly recommend still 32-bit for most users. There are some edge cases where 64-bit is one. It's made available, but to simplify things, we want to keep people by default using 32-bit. So I could change that. So what's happening now, it's going out and getting, think of the first little bits about, hey, here's what I'm supposed to do. Connection speed isn't super fast here. We'll talk about kind of typical You know, it's all dependent on network connection. But it's going out and, you know, finding out, hey, these are the bits I'm going to need to gather. You think of that little diagram with the little blocks. We're essentially just telling it, hey, I need these blocks. We're also behind the scenes going out and gathering think of it as a silent virtualization client, right? I need some kind of client that has that ability to take it from kind of virtual to physical world. So that's all happening in here. First run experience by default, you're going to get this experience. Plays a nice little welcome video. If you're just getting started, I'm not going to make you listen to it. Here we go. So it gives you a quick view. And Greg is a real person in the engineering team, which is kind of awesome. He actually worked on some of this, so that's fun to see his name show up in all these different places. But the user is going to go through, and you know, things are continuing to install in the background. I can double click on this icon. Maybe I can successfully do it with my touch computer. Well, in the meantime. Yes. Or it's not going to pop up right now. So it's continued to stream in the background, but what is really going on? If I go back, it probably hasn't populated them quite yet. We'll keep tabs on this. And it's unfortunate that I actually closed that, and now seemingly can't reopen it. It'll give you an indicator or a continual indicator of, you know, the progress that's going on. And I suspect this is going to take several minutes to install in the connection speed we have in here. But you know, I can continue, the user themselves can continue to work. If I had 2010 on here, my other demo environment were too slow to actually connect to. But with 2010, I can leave 2010 up and running. I can have Word open while I'm installing this next to it. The other thing that's going to happen is if I have existing add-ins, those add-ins are going to carry straight over and continue to work. Same thing with if I had done ribbon customizations, if I had done a company-specific tab in the ribbon, that same ribbon customization comes over. I don't need to do anything. So not only is it side-by-side, but it's also respectful of the things that are already there. So let's so you can see here, it's definitely not done installing. It hasn't given us any kind of a victory notification. But you can see here I have PowerPoint starting to launch already, and it's still... Right now, it's going, oh, hey, wait, they want to start PowerPoint. So that's kind of rejiggering the path we're getting things, getting the rest of the things in place. See here now it's getting the last few bits down, we hope. And while all of Office is not yet down, I can go ahead and start launching apps. And what you would find is if you go use some of the advanced Excel features, certain language features that are kind of bigger things to ship down, they won't be there yet. They'll be grayed out, but I can, you know, very quickly, within a couple of minutes, most typically, be up and have my app up and going. And so it's as simple as that. And then I've already been in this machine, and so that's why it should have actually prompted me to sign in. But since I just reset this machine, it had my credentials. But the experience should have been, you should have seen an initial sign in. That first sign in experience is what actually wires us back to this site to say, hey, Mr. Brian, you now have another machine that you've just added back to this this list of machines. So we'll eventually get it back in here. So as simple as that. The user just goes to the portal. And when they first come in, if they're an E3 kind of user, I'll kind of give you the click flow that they would get to. The first 2 weeks, they actually get this experience. It should be helpful for you to tell users, hey, just go sign in the service. They can do all this stuff online, and they can click in PC and Mac, and they can immediately, you know, just have a quick click the install button. I'm done. I can always then, you know, as a more advanced user, come back to our little, let me get that out of the way, a little gear, and come back and say, manage all this information and go to software, and I keep tabs on kind of everything, so kind of your settings. So you can see here now it's adding me back because I actually was installed in here earlier. The Surface Pro is the machine that's been added back to this list of activated devices. But it's as simple as that. I didn't really know what to do, didn't have to remove anything. we're up and going as quick as that. And apologize, I couldn't show you the 2010 side by side, though. You know, we'll be publishing more content, and I'll point you to content to learn more about that. But 2010 would remain on that machine as well. So let's switch back. So that's, you know, I just want to give you a few, like, hey, if you do the portal-based install, that's what it looks like. It's that easy. So you go pilot this, go try it at home. You can go set that up and get going. A quick comment on, well, a little bit more comment on side-by-side. Side-by-side's awesome way to get you started piloting. Don't recommend it as a place you would expect to run forever for everyone. You know, there may be, maybe your finance group created some crazy Access application back in Access 97. There's no way we can really recreate that or have the investment to recreate that. That's fine. I can leave that old thing installed, and I can move everybody else forward. This is virtualized. But we don't want the kind of the duality of going and typing Word and now seeing Word 2013 and Word 2010 or whatever the version may be. It's actually challenging for users. So definitely not a recommended permanent configuration, but great as a way to get started, great as a way to deal with compatibility issues. So walk you through kind of the stuff you didn't see was kind of the magic thing, and I couldn't get to pop back up. That it was simply would have just showed a percentage progressing. What actually happens here? So you know, the stuff I talked about, the assumption is, yeah, I already have a service provisioned. I already have accounts created. And that user has now clicked that button. And they say, yep. First thing we do is we send down this bootstrapper that kind of that sets up the virtual file system. And that runs under the user context for the first 10%. After that 10%, we kick it off and say, OK, system account, you take care of getting the rest of this stuff down. So streaming begins, and process moves into that system context. So this is actually a very important point to realize when we talk about doing managed distributions later on. The fact that it switches a system account actually impacts where and how we distribute the software, because the system account probably isn't going to have access to your source distribution shares, et cetera. So we're going to get back to the scenarios and talking about scenarios where we actually want to do copy local and execute, because you know, you could, in theory, add system account access to all your shares, but that might be more hassle than it's worth. We're still going to pipe down all this content anyway, so might be easier just to move the content down. We'll look at those recommended practices here later in the session. So about 15% in is when I can start launching the first apps, and it has enough that the apps can start coming up. And then behind the scenes, the rest of this is caching. If I go offline after this, like, yes, I have PowerPoint, but I don't have all the features or Word, et cetera. I need that user to stay online till it completes. If they do go offline, okay, because this is the reason they actually switched to a system account, so that when they come online later, even if a different user comes online, streaming will pick up and go, oh, let me finish that. So that is actually kind of the design justification of why it switches out of that user context, because if they do, for whatever reason, get disconnected and they have to come back, we need the system account to be the safety net to make sure it gets completed, because we need Office to get completed. And continuous caching, once it's fully cached and finalized, that user can go fully offline. They're good to go for the short term, until we need to revalidate activation. So because it's a subscription service, the first time it activates, I've gotten essentially a 30-day activation key. There's some background processes that check independently. First 30 days, absolutely no problem. I get an additional 15-day buffer, and then we start nagging, and then following that, it's actually going to kick itself into RFM mode. So if I take a user and some user maybe gets in a boat and sets off to the middle of the ocean with no connectivity, and they're out there for 2 months, they would lose connectivity. That would be a problem. So scenario where an MSI installation probably still makes sense. But if I'm a user who just occasionally connects, even once a month, no biggie. And if they do fall out of tolerance, if I've gone on, if I went on paternity leave and was out of the office for 2 to 3 months, no problem. When I come back, it technically is an RFM, but the first time I sign in, it's going to go out to the service and go, oh, you still have a valid subscription? Okay, we'll just turn office back on for you. So there's nothing from an admin perspective for you to go do. So that kind of coming out of fault tolerance is actually taken care of. So all well and good. You can now, that's the pieces that work regardless of how we get the bits down. That's how we actually do the process that works within. So it's good to understand kind of how that flow happens. Now we'll look at, I actually want to do a managed deployment. So I'll kind of walk you through the high level steps, the things you'd have to think about. Some of these I'm not going to have time to go into today, but you know, I've set up the service and I added users to the service. So there's the whole story there. I spend a lot of my time talking about this, that you know, getting users to the service, where I start is probably a cloud identity. I can simply load users in the service in a manual web form. I can CSV them up. I can PowerShell them in. Okay, I get more advanced. I'm going to want to connect to my Active Directory. I can synchronize users in from my Active Directory as well. So you'll take the kind of you know, the approach to use the level that makes sense for you to get started. So just calling that out as, hey, for this to work, it's an important piece to have. We're going to introduce a new tool for you. It's Office Deployment Tool, which in the next few minutes we'll spend some time demoing. It's a command line tool, so don't be afraid you have to learn a whole lot. But I get that tool, and that's actually what the tool itself is used to download the bits. So, yeah, I can go to that portal. I get that little tiny bootstrapper package, and it behind the scenes somehow reached out and got the actual Office software. So think of this tool as just a way to go out to our content delivery network, CDN, reach out and say, okay, Brian, what's the latest Pro Plus package? Pull that down into a Office installable package, into a setup package. So I'm going to download that same tool that I'm going to use to set up a configuration XML file. Say, hey, here's the features, here's how, like, some limited controls of the language I install, et cetera. I then take that package and put it into my software distribution engine of my choosing. So today I'll walk you through just putting in an MDT and put it into kind of image engineering approach. You could use that same approach and put it into System Center, whatever your you know, software distribution engine is. I target that out and I push it out. I push the package out, it installs. The piece that we don't really show in here is after the installation, that user then has to, recently say that users have to be in the organization or added to the service, is that user, we install it, the user then has to sign in the first time. The user, for some reason, doesn't know those credentials, they get a 5-day grace. It'll be a little red nag, and you'll see it here later in the session. I'll say, hey, you need to sign in to activate this thing. So you get 5 days of, you know, user can just ignore or not know it right away, but pretty quickly we have to do this. If you think about that, you see the deployment tool, we're making all the bits available to everybody. There's no more going to Volume License Center and get Office bits. If you get this free tool, you can go get all the bits you want. Office is there for the use. The requirement, the trade-off is, then we need a way to control how much you use it. And then from an installation perspective, you know, you still would think of this, hey, I can now then go layer in add-ins. I just want to call this out as, hey, yeah, I can still then go, I want my SAP reporting add-in or additional mail archiving add-ins. I can layer those on and put that as part of an add-on installation package. So just from kind of level setting, if you've dealt with Office installations in the past, these are the tools you're used to. Group policy, great. Config XML and the setup structure, and the Office customization tool, which was really a way to set group policy preferences. We actually have removed Office customization tool from being appropriate, or it's not, no, let me restate that. It's not available for Pro Plus. Still available for Office Professional Plus 2013 for VL. The customization tool really doesn't have a role to play in the Pro Plus world because, hey, we did the work to say group policy, so that's the thing we actually want to just drive home is the thing we want you to do is spend your time building your policy template. So we're going to give you the templates, push those out. That way, when I push it out, I know that it's actually enforced and moving away from having this additional tool to do preference customization. So the Office deployment tool itself, very basic little tool. Command line tool has three switches, as you can see up here. I still am on inking mode. Sorry about that. So three switches, setup, download, configure, or packager. And we'll go through each of these. So download makes sense, right? That's how I get the bits. Configure is probably a better way to think of it is it's the install mode. But I can also, it's configure because I could also can use it to remove products, update products, et cetera. And then packager is the command we use if we want to turn a Pro Plus package into an AppV package. If I want to turn a click to run Pro Plus installation package and reconstitute it into a package that I can put into an AppV infrastructure or System Center AppV infrastructure. So this one tool kind of does it all. And that's how we are able to do all those things. So let's have a look at the tool. I think it's the best way to give you a quick view of what I can do with it. So the tool itself, my apologies. Just kill that. Sure, desktop. So I've already downloaded the tool and just have a little shortcut of things. It's on Download Center. At the end of this deck, there's a link to it if you want to go check it out. So I won't show the URL. It downloads this little simple executable, 853 KB. It's a pretty tiny little thing. When I run that, essentially just is unpacking these two things. So the tool itself gives you these two things, a setup file and a template configuration XML file. That's it. That's simple. It's all command line driven, which, some people have said, well, it's, 2013, should you have some GUI for this? And ultimately, we're actually solving for all the automation and scripting. So we've opted for make sure we have full support for that. We'll just keep it very simple, easy to understand. So this is the sample configuration file that it ships with. I'll use this as an opportunity to talk about some of those elements. And then I'll go through the scenarios of downloading, installing, and packaging here in a bit. So first off, configuration declaration. And then I get into what do I want to do with it. And that's this first section here, which is important. So I am adding, and I'm going to tell it, I'm adding some products. So I'm actually going to say add Pro Plus Retail. We could also add Visio Pro Retail. We could also add Project Pro Retail. So those are all available. They're all service-based options that you can purchase. You can go get, any of those above items from the CDN. The source path is an interesting thing, because when I'm downloading, source path defines essentially where the deployment tool is actually going to save the bits. So think of it that way. What file share, what local drive do I want to put the stuff on I download? Right, that's easy enough. When I do the installation, it is literally the source path of where do I pull the source bits from to run the installation. So pretty simple approach. Office Client Edition just sets the architecture that I actually want to download or install. Product ID you mentioned, so it tells it what I'm doing. And then language ID, this is from download and an install perspective, what languages I want to download, language packs I download essentially, and then which ones I install, and so forth. We'll come back and have a discussion about updates as a separate topic, but this is actually where I can control how updates are managed, and we'll talk about how this differs. But in short, I can tell it to leave updates on, I can tell it to get updates from a specified location, or I could turn updates off altogether, and we'll have to deal with that manually. And of course, kind of the static stuff you might be expecting of, hey, what's the display level, what logging, where do I want to put it? So default location, if I do nothing, it's just going to log to percent temp. You can add them there. You can add your list of languages there. A forthcoming update will enable shell matching, but it is not provided at this time, but in the coming monthly update, we'll we're working on getting that done. And yeah, the question is just, you know, can I add multiple language? Yeah, you can add them. Just continue your list. So let's run through the first scenario, which is to download. So I've already kind of staged this, and I have a download XML file, and just keeping things as simple as I can. So I wanted to define, you know, where my source path is, where it's going to go. In this case, I actually gave it to multiple languages to download. I left the rest of it alone, essentially, and said, yep, I want Office Pro Plus, 32-bit, these languages, put it here. That's all I really need to know for download, because I don't want to type. Let's go grab the... Here's the actual command I would use to invoke that. I'm going to run it from that directory because I didn't put in full pass. So pipe that in. So syntax, super simple. That setup we call, switch is download, and I go kick this off. I'm going to start it, and I'll cancel it. So it's just going to go off its merry way and start copying these files down. I'm going to cancel. I think it's already, I have another folder that's already complete. Don't want to kill our network just to pull those down. It'll take, out of my experience is that's probably a 10 to 15 minute experience to pull down. It's pulling down, depending on the number of languages, a single language is usually about 900 megs, the neutral plus one language. And then each language, depends on the language, but usually about 100 to 200 megs added. So you can see there, I was actually, I did this back in Belgium earlier this week. So this is the outcome that it actually downloads. See here, you get some basic Bootstrap information. V32CAB is some of the leading file that says, hey, this is what to install. If you actually look at what's the bits it installed, it's nothing like you're used to seeing before. There's no MSI here. The thing is simply these big data packages. You notice here the language neutral one is the big monster at 800 megs, and then depending on your language, you get more or less data to facilitate that. And so that's what an Office click to run offline package actually looks like. I can download multiple versions, so actually if we go back to the ODT folder. If I didn't tell it a source path, if I can leave that out and run download, what it'll do is start putting it right here in this location, which is the location of setup. And it'll create an Office folder. And voila, here's my stuff. And so you can see here I actually have multiple versions from the last few weeks or months of different versions of Reiterate and get closer. So I can download and have my own versions available to use. The thing to note here is, when I install, I can choose to not define a version, and that just means it'll always get the latest and greatest. It'll use the latest and greatest version, and kind of the trick to change, we'll go back to that setup file, and that's actually where I have it in there. It's not in this one. You can actually just type in the additional switch is version, and then you would just literally tell it, you know, 15 dash blah, 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 whatever the version is. And I can actually do that for download. I can do that for install, so I can actually target a specific version. If I tell it nothing, which is what I've been doing, it just goes and gets the newest version, the highest level version it can get. So you have the ability to control that. So let's go on to... getting ready to install the thing. So in this case, I'm going to be very simple about it. Like, actually, I don't need to tell it where to get the source from. I'm just going to tell it, hey, take it from wherever setup is being run from, look in that location for an Office folder. If you noticed, when I did the download, I said just CODT Tech Days. And then in the download, it actually had there was an Office folder in there. So beware from our own trials. Like, you'll go try to be smart and say, oh, I want to put it in my source files, Office. And then it'll come along, the download tool will come along and stick another Office on there, and you'll be crazy path going on. So a heads up about that. But from this perspective, to add Office, I just say, hey, I want 32-bit. I want this product. I want this language. I'm adding it. There's also a remove option. And that's it. That's all I need to tell it. So then the installation command switch, which I won't run because I should have set up for running it on this computer, it's just set up, configure, and then point to that XML file. So like setup, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Configure switch says go do whatever that XML file says. And we're telling it add Office Pro Plus 32-bit English language and take the newest version, because I didn't tell it, that it can find in that Office folder. So that's where it's important to kind of understand what's going on here. See Office, and it comes in, and it goes, okay, give me the newest version. And what actually happened, I run download, there's only ever one V32 cab that ever existed at a time. If I wanted to kind of manually override this, I could actually go call this V32 cab that old, go back and take this 1511 and just rename it V32 cab. And then when I ran this, it could actually point to it. So there's a couple of ways to do the versioning. The best thing to do is be very explicit in your config file and just point to the version you want if you're not planning to use the latest and greatest version. So maybe for your pilot tests, you always go to latest and greatest. You then lock on a version that you want to push out, and then I use that in my XML file to push to my users. Simple enough, and there's really the thing I wanted to land with you is like the deployment tools, it's all command line, simple little config file to control it. I use it for download, I use it for install, and I can use it for app view, which we'll look at in a minute if there's interest. I didn't go through all the switches, and I won't discuss each and every one in detail, but kind of you'll have this as a reference document. Download controls, things we did mention, what product you want to add, what source path. If I don't tell it, it's just going to stick it in the current location of setup and create Office. I probably want to direct it to a given location or share where I want to store all this, my language, my version, all things I want to control on my download. When I go to install, add versus remove, important distinction. But the same tool is actually used to silently remove Office as well, an easy way to do that. And then the product and source path, again, server share, or if I wanted to, I could leave that blank, which would then assume you're running, you kept your source in the same location that setup was at. Some additional controls, and we touched on these, but the point is like I can come up and control kind of display that more granular controls. They actually come from group policy. So that's a piece we didn't really talk about. Like, hey, what if I wanted to disable first run or something of that nature? We'll show you some of those experiences here in a minute. So that's all fine and well. See how I get download. This is usually not a problem. Great. It can run a little simple script. How would I actually think about putting that into some kind of basic automation? So we're going to use MDT, Deployment Toolkit, to build just a basic system image and give you kind of a feel for what that might look like. But then you can take this kind of and easily apply it to what you would do in System Center or Alteryx or whatever the package may be. So let's jump over. And I already have MDT running. I've created a deployment share, and I've created a couple task sequences. So I'm going to open this task sequence, and I'm going to ignore all the Windows stuff, right? I'm actually using this as a OSD plus apps. So I'm going to focus on the plus apps piece. That's the part I care about today. So I mentioned this before. The recommendation is to do essentially a download and execute, like System Center would want to do as well. So we're going to do two specific commands. So rather, I did add Office as an application in MDT. Let me go back to that for a second. I did add it here, but I'm not going to use MDT's normal infrastructure for deploying the apps. I'm not going to say install app and just take what I added. But rather, I'm going to be explicit and have my own way of dealing with this app. It needs a unique treatment right now. Let's click over here. And so what I'm actually going to do is, I'm doing a kind of brain dead thing. I'm going to say, copy this. In this case, I created an MDT local media source, so I actually fixed it to D. That's what I was doing. In a real world scenario where this was coming from an active deployment share, I'd just leave it as a deployment root and then path it and then tell it, you know, copy it. And we're copying just to the system drive in the deploy folder. And I could put this in a temporary folder, have MDT self clean it up so I don't leave the source out there as well. Once it's there, we're going to then say, hey, all I need to do is go kick off, set up XE pointing to the configuration file of my choosing. So not only did I copy the source, but I should copy that config file. I could alternatively choose to, you know, pipe it out to a deployment share. I solve for, I want my demo to work totally offline, so everything kind of got shipped with me, but I could, you know, have relative pass out to a server share to kick this off. But all this is calling is set up XE, configure, and then the path to wherever my config file, config XML is. So as simple as that. And I, in this case, I'm just going to package this up and I created offline media and attached it here to my VM. So let's actually just kind of run through this. The important piece that we've done some investments to make sure that MDT and others had a nice way to be aware that, hey, you don't want to move past this install Office piece in a automated installation until you know that Office is actually totally complete. You don't want the next task to get started. Maybe it's installing Office add-ins. Well, you won't want that to happen until you know that it's fully cached. So I'm doing this all in the background, probably at night, so that's okay if it has to wait the 5 minutes. Okay, no, not a big deal on user impact. But knowing that these system tools are going to watch and wait for the exit code, and the exit code comes not when it does the handoff to the system account, but rather when it's fully cached and says, yep, I'm ready to go, you can truly move on. So we'll run through, I'll do some snapshot magic, and we'll quickly kind of jump through these steps. Right, this guy is not running. Let's start it. So in this case, took that MDT SAT test sequence, packaged it up. I'm at the point now where it's going to, you know, I'd asked me all the questions and said, hey, we're ready to go. Take off going, go deploy an OS. And we could sit here for 20 minutes and watch Windows 8 install, but I don't think we want to do that. Watched it enough in the past. What's the interesting piece is, okay, the post-OS install tasks really start here at the, you know, from Windows 8 perspective, well, let's start. So let's go and apply that, and we'll jump forward to this guy. And you see there, we're picking up where we left off. So we've come in. If I come to the desktop, you're going to see those MDT tasks going to get completed here. And now watch the command. We're actually copying that package to the local source, so just reiterating, yep, this is what we want to do. Pull it over. And in a moment, so now it's going to start the installation process. And it's going to sit here and wait for this installation to get completed. And then exit. So MDT is going to hold up. Any post additional steps are going to be delayed by design before they continue on. So we don't need to watch that continue. I'm going to come back and get to all these different topics. So let's pick up where we left off there. So it gives you a quick view. Kind of key takeaway on that was, do the download and execute approach. That's going to be the safest thing for you because that whole system account handoff and just pipe it, to your config XML. That's what you actually get to control. That's how you control what, where, and when the thing installs. From a no prompt deployment, I know there's a setting in config XML that said no. EULA, but it didn't take care of all the first run things. You saw earlier that movie popped up. There's other things you might want to turn off. You went truly silent install. No surprises if I'm doing this in the background. How do I disable all those things? Typical stuff we always document. Here's all the group policy commands. I know these slides are to be made available, so things to be aware of. So you're going to disable both the first run experience and that first things first, which you didn't get to see, but it's the opt into customer feedback experience, et cetera, updates. You don't want users controlling that. You want to control that. you can configure it, and then you can turn those off so the users aren't prompted with those. And these are the policy commands or the policy objects to set. So if you want to set these, push the policy object out before I actually do the Office deployment. Just a quick note on AppV and Pro Plus. So AppV packages of Office Pro Plus are created from the click-to-run packages. So if you want to do AppV, you use Office Pro Plus. You do that by downloading it, which we did in the first step. And rather than installing it, I run the packager switch, which I won't have time to go into today, but I run packager on it. But it's essentially, it just the internal term on it is actually runs a flattener command and says turns it out of those .dat files into an AppV file ready to import into AppV. You know, we've seen customers wanting to use AppV to have even more granular control of how I target and deploy the thing. To actually do that, an important KB that you should refer to this 277.2509. If you actually go through this step to package it, hey, how do I actually land it into AppV or System Center? You definitely want to review that KB as the latest and greatest tips and tricks to actually do that. So I wanted to spend a couple minutes on updating. So if you do nothing, if I tell nothing, if I don't configure updating, if I do a portal install, this is what happens. Default option automatically gets updates from the cloud. It looks every day, looks for an update, pulls down updates, and it pulls down a delta update. So the amount of update depends on how much change we've produced and also how long it's been since it last checked. So it's actually, when I installed Pro Plus, it created a scheduled task on the client. It runs once a day, reaches out to the 365 service and does that. So that's how updates are happening. And if you do nothing, that's what's going to happen. I then have the ability to do automatic from network. And you saw in the config XML, there was a configuration command that said updates. I'd leave the updates on, but I would actually give it an update path. And that's what this is actually used for. So rather than telling it, hey, check online for updates, if you wanted to be in control of when which patch gets actually pushed to your clients, you simply would tell at install time, hey, I want to take care of this, or I want to be in control of what updates or how quickly things get pushed out. I would give an update path. That same scheduled task, that same infrastructure continues to happen in the client. So once a day, it says, hey, go look for updates. It just happens to look on your defined configured update path rather than looking in the cloud. So you get to be in control of that. So you have, as an admin, up to 12 months of leeway. Like you can get up to 12 months behind with updates before it goes out of support. So you don't have to move, you know, within a week or a month. You actually have to 12 months to test things out and probably put into a. I'll show you a process we've seen a customer use of, you know, setting up a routine where they kind of systematically move these in. You can do a I want to take care of it all myself, much more WSUS type. It just will go turn off updates, and should we tell the client, never run that thing, but Mr. Customer, Mr. IT, you're going to have to take care of this. But if I truly want to have the most control, this is what I could do. There are some caveats you should be aware of. If you take this last approach, you're actually rerunning the setup installer each and every time. It's smart enough to at least not take the entire package, right? It'll look and say, oh, Office is, you're telling me to add product. I'll look and see what version it is, and it'll do a matchup and just take Delta update. So it won't be a huge Delta change. But what it will do is actually, if you have, if the user had pinned Office applications to the desktop start bar, it'll be removed because it actually was doing a full repair of those. So there's some things you should be aware of that that's the most control, but actually going to have some user impacts. So if you go that approach, so gives you the I do nothing, magically cloud takes care of it. Road warriors, maybe that works. I want to have at least version control, or I want to be in total control of exactly how often this thing happens. So you should give you an example of an RDP customer, what they were doing as an example of how you can kind of automate this whole approach. So in their case, they're using option two there. They were using, hey, I want to do this automatic from network. So what they actually did is set up a scheduled task that runs download on a regular basis, goes out to our service, pulls it down into a test patch share, and they have a set of pilot users which have a configuration XML that points them to your pilot user. And they immediately get this stuff as soon as it's there, once a day, and they're kind of the continual pilot user testing. Once they feel that's confident, they have seen no issues, they can now choose to take and copy that down into the production update server location, and then all the remaining clients are getting updated. So there's kind of a routine you can get yourself into to make that fairly manageable. Just quick note on troubleshooting, there are log files for Pro Plus, so when things go haywire, go turn on verbose logging with this key, so it's not on by default. And then the log file you're going to want to look for is this integrated office. The stars are going to be some unique GUID, but that's your place to look. I wanted to just share that little tidbit with you that here's how to turn on verbose logging, here's how to find that log file that I start giving you tips. In our experience, we haven't really had to use this much. The biggest thing is the whole system account handoff, people not having access to it. If it dies at 10%, go figure that out, because it's at 10% that it makes a handoff. So that's the likely case and the most common thing we've seen reported so far. So in our last 20 minutes, I want to spend a little bit of time talking to you about the management side of this. So certainly, shout out now if you want to go back into any of the deploy features. We can spend a few minutes and we can go there. But I also wanted to cover off with you the features of Office Telemetry that have been introduced to help you manage. So what is telemetry? First and foremost, it's a real tool that's part of the product. In the past, we've given you, how many of you heard of OMPM or OEED or OffScan? We had all these other crazy after out of band products that we released. This time we said, hey guys, we really need to be able to support our customers as a part of the core product. So first off, Office Telemetry is a feature of Office. I don't have to go download something else. It's in there. It's in Office. We'll show you it here in a few minutes. What does it do? First and foremost, it's about identifying documents. And we used to give you OMPM was a tool we used first release of 2007 to help with the binary to XML format change. And it was very good at, it would go scan and find all the Office documents you had, but it really didn't give you relevance of, well, what I should be really worried about are the documents that people use actively. And so Telemetry takes that approach to say, hey, rather than telling you've got a bunch of documents, we all know we have a lot, or a bunch of files, show me which files are actively used, by who, how often. So it gives you that ability to see, hey, these are the things, if I'm getting ready for a project, these are the things I should be most concerned with testing. You can reach out to your business units and say, hey, we think you ought to at least test these, or is there anything we're missing? Gives you a much more powerful position to help them see that you can support them through the process. So about detecting issues, and this is in Office Pro Plus or Office 2013 and forward. We've instrumented the product to actually tell you, hey, Office is crashing, or this add-in is failing to load, or is taking a long time to load. So actually reporting those up. So once I get into that pilot or into that run state, hey, how are things working? And then also solution management. So, how did you ever understand what add-ins, all the different business groups actually managed to get installed? We can actually show that list to you, and then an overall deployment tracking. So we can actually get an inventory of what versions of Office out there. Did any of them not actually get updated? You can do a very detailed thing, detailed tracking. So before I go into any more details on this, spend a couple minutes just looking at the product itself. So I said it was shipped as part of Office, so I'm just going to, if you go into all apps, you would see these loaded after you install Office. There's two components. There's telemetry dashboard for Office and telemetry log for Office. Dashboard, think of it as the all-up organizational view. The log is the kind of event viewer view that's on this individual PC. So each and every PC has a log. I can use a log viewer to view what's going on here. And then the telemetry dashboard, which we'll look at, is actually my way of viewing all those on aggregate. I launch this up. Of course, we're the Office team, so we build our dashboard in Excel. Nice way for you to get started, kind of gives you the basics. Let's go ahead and get started. Here's the infrastructure, which I'll go through in a moment. Let's go ahead and connect to a database. So you can now, after today, and say you've seen real fake data. This is data that we actually collected within Microsoft, and then we changed usernames to avoid, you know, Steve B showing up or something like that. But we had to do this to be able to show you kind of like what the distribution of files kind of looks like. I forgot to run a script, so you have a warning up here that I haven't connected to my telemetry processors for a couple days. So that's what's going on there. So it's giving me a warning, hey, this data is a bit out of date, which actually I scroll down, you're going to see it reflected. I magically had all my deployments disappear because my processors haven't been reporting for a couple days. But that's okay. We can actually look at this. So I have different views here of documents or files, solutions being add-ins or the new apps. A view in those processors, are they working or not? Whatever my deployment status, or I can build up my own custom reporting. Now I actually can do filtering. And one of the decision points you're going to have as you configure telemetry is to say, hey, how do I want to tag or how do I want to group data for reporting in this dashboard? So I can actually go and get to control that, but then I also, you know, can use that to report. So let's, in a few minutes left here, have a look at a few of the things we can do. If I just go into documents, I get a list right off the start of, hey, here's the most used document. Of course, guess what? Normal email is template is the most used. Well, yeah, we'll show you that's a built-in, so you're probably going to immediately start by filtering those out. But this gives you a quick way to show, hey, these are the documents that my organization is most often using. I can see this was done at a point where a lot of users were already using 2013. So I can see how many total users and users using 2013. I can actually expand these out and see by version, and actually you can see that by user. And if I have questions on a particular document, I can get back into, I can drill into a particular document, see the actual user, see where the location of the file was, and see all about it. I can also come back here. The other interesting bit is once I'm compiling or in run state, I want to know what files aren't working, so I can come in the unstable. So this is a mapping of the 2013 versions or the Pro Plus versions. And I actually can drill into any of these. Let's find a good one down here. And I actually can drill in and see information about what was actually causing the issue. So I should report that information back up. So if I come over to this doc status tracker at 12 informative errors, I drill into that. It's actually, this is an issue tracking event. User was using it. We've actually detected that they're trying to use a calendar control, an ActiveX control that's no longer supported. We're going to get that information. We link you out to more information about fixing that, about how you replace that. Actually go down and see the users, when and how often it's going on. So I actually could be proactive about issues, not waiting for users to say, hey, there's something going on. Or if they do, you can come in and kind of back that up and see how broad that issue is. Also, from a solutions perspective, I can come in and see, hey, here's all the add-ins I have that my users are running. Of course, I can do the same thing of filtering out those the built-in ones and kind of get to the, hey, here's the stuff everybody's got installed. And, you know, great, gives me a quick inventory. Here's the things I might not even know running my organization. The other important bit here is we often get calls of, hey, Office is slow. Outlook is really slow to load. This actually, for the new versions of Office, we actually report back how long each add-in took to load, and we can now then kind of pinpoint, hey, there's the offender. And we actually then enable you this cool add-in management mode where I actually will generate a PowerShell script for you to add to set a group policy object to block it or to enable it. So I can either choose to force things to run. If I want to add in, maybe it's for archiving that I always want to enable, we can actually give you this nice, convenient way to go set that add-in to be forced or to be always be blocked. I don't have to worry about the iTunes add-in. I don't want that running in my organization. I can go turn that off if I want to. So quick views of kind of the things you can do. Let's give you a couple minutes of how this all works. Okay. So I showed you the dashboard, which is over here on the right. Data came from over there on the left, the clients. In the middle, there's some pieces, which is that list of stuff. Hey, said you got to go put these pieces in place. List is quite long, but it's actually quite simple. Like, I need a file share. I need somewhere to dump my data to. We install a data processor, which takes those files, pushes them into a database, and I use group policy to say how all this should flow. So purposely architected to be very simple, easy to control. How it works, the clients are just configured to say, hey, turn on, send your data to this share. The processor's installed, says, look at that share. Here's a database to put it to. And then when you saw when I went to the dashboard, I just said, hey, go to that reporting dashboard. We can see what you want. We also offer these for the agents for pre-2013 clients, so 2003, 2007, 2010. Urge you to go get started with this information. You know, if you're planning an upgrade in the future months, go start collecting this data. If you have this data, it'll make your life easier. You can start collecting, and even if you don't have the REST infrastructure yet, it'll eventually come over. Push agent out. So this is a unique thing. On Office Pro Plus or Office 2013 client, the agent's baked in. We obviously didn't have this agent back in the prior days, so you have to actually push this agent out, but then it just uses the same infrastructure. So same group policy controls it, pushes it in, and we get that blended view into a telemetry dashboard. Okay? So that's a quick... The question was, where do I get the group policy ADMX file? It's on the front. The template we use is the Office 15 or Office 2013 group policy template. It's in there. So regardless of the version I use the group policy templates for Office 2013. Good question. So it doesn't matter. It's always that same. I use the same group policy objects regardless of version. So other question, if you start looking at this, your legal department might start asking, like, wait, you're collecting lots of PII information about exactly profile of, hey, these are all the files this user works on, down to, sensitive information, even file names. And so we did some investments here. In group policy, I can set some solution, or we enable some solutions to help you with this. So first, I can do essentially hiding of the data. I can obfuscate the file name. So what we're going to do at time of collection, we immediately turn the file into something that looks like what just happened down there below into SK blah, 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 1. Essentially, it's a GUID. We know this user had some file that looks like this, and we know if it worked or it failed. But that's all we know about it. So it is an option if you have a sensitive group. We ran into this most in Germany with some of the labor laws there, that this was a thing we needed to do to meet their requirements. So it was kind of organization and country by country, we do give you that capacity. So that means your reporting is going to say, hey, people use this one file that has its name something like this. We don't actually know what it's exactly named, but you know the users, you know how often, you even know where it's shared. That's alarming. Something's not plugged in. What if you, something was loose, I guess. But it will be done by the time it dies anyway, so it'll be fine. The other thing we can do, we can actually filter out solution file types. So if for some reason I didn't want to collect Excel file types, I could filter those out. The other important piece we can do is this: the idea of thresholds, because kind of the stuff that we might get in trouble about is the one-off files, or even just a handful of people would know about files. What I really care about from my perspective is knowing what are the things used at mass. So I could set, by default, the threshold is we only show things in the dashboard if they have been used more than 5 times. But I could up that number and say people have to use it 100 times before, one, before I care about it, and two, before it becomes something that the organization probably ought to know about. I think we're fine. So those are a couple other strategies you can use. The last few minutes, I'll just give you some tidbits on planning on this. I'm going to give you kind of benchmarks on sizing. What kind of, I just showed you that infrastructure. You know, we're talking about a database and processors. I'm not talking about huge infrastructure, but I want to give you a kind of a ballpark of what this almost looks like. So first is, what do we collect and how big those collection files are? So we send minuscule little files back and forth. So what we're going to send is just like pointers to, hey, here's the files, here's the names. They're very small, 64 to 50K, depending on the difference. The reason the newer versions are a little larger is because we actually collect the true telemetry information. We collect that information about, hey, how are the files working? In the pre-2013 versions, we collect what we refer to just as our static scan information. So most the files are using, what add-ins are there, and system information. To get actual, like, did the file work? Was there an issue detected? That only comes when on the new versions of Office. And so if you look at this, if you watch that little diagram, right, the little log file flew right over, and the file share and processor picked it up. If you had some issue, you could pile up a bunch of those log files. It's simple math, right? Like, they can get quite large, but we should never expect a share to sit there and just collect files, because the moment it hits, the processor should pick it up and move it out. It's gone. We don't keep it there. But kind of plan for maybe a day of something's loose, but that's fine. Just plan for a little bit of room, but we're not talking about a ton of space that you need to worry about. The other kind of question that was already asked is, what about the policy? So it is the Office 15 ADMX. In this path, user configuration, admin templates, Pro Plus telemetry dashboards, there's a set of configurations. I can do those both through the root policy. If you're just getting started, you can push them as registry keys. So here's the keys that are documented on TechNet. So we had the question like, hey, what if I have a set of work group test PCs? Yeah, sure, just go put these registry keys in and you can be up and going as well. All right, a little bit about the processor. It can run on Windows 7 or server products, so pretty easy to support. Certainly is, so if you want to just start testing, put it in your Windows 7 box, you'd be up and going. SQL Server 2005 or greater, Express Editions allowed. Really, then that's answered by, well, it depends on how big your database is going to get. So about 10,000 users for a year of data is kind of the limit I'd probably want to feel comfortable with SQL Express. Beyond that, I want to move to full-blown SQL. For the processor perspective, there is a fair bit of processing that's doing to push that data over. So the recommendation is one telemetry processor is sufficient for about 25K users, assuming we're not highly distributed. We can add additional processors if needed. The last piece here is actually, this is what we used to tell you. Say, hey, to manage this stuff, you're going to have to do some special permissions. The first thing you have to know is, how does someone have access to in the dashboard to report on this? There's a special role created in the database. All those users have to be added. We used to tell you to do NoSQL. I'm going to tell you that the bottom thing is finally released. So told you it's all delivered. We realized, hey, a set of features that didn't get shipped. We talked engineering into shipping an out-of-band tool to enable these things. So again, the link is in the final slide here. It allow you to, one, I talked about, only be concerned about keeping data for a year. Well, this tool will allow you to go clean and archive that data out, enable settings and permissions. Like I talked about, changing the threshold number. It's a command line tool, but it'll allow you to do those things and manage the data that you get in. Not something you need in day one, but something you'll need in the future. So I know we're pretty much at time. I wanted to call out a few resources we have. First is Office Ignite. Some of you may have been to some in-person events. We're really evolving that to be shorter technical events and a lot more online webcasts. We're getting a lot of SMEs to come in and do specific talks, online web labs, etc. So Office Ignite, go check that out. You'll see the different events. We're actually off in Copenhagen next week, so I think it's full, but you can check online if you happen to be from there. Go ahead and join us. Other cool series that, if you know Jeremy Chapman's one of my colleagues just launched this garage series. I'll start it playing as we wrap up here. But really taking, you can see the logo if you've seen Top Gear, been definitely inspired by that. But this idea of like, hey, you need to know lots of maybe some not always the most exciting stuff, but let's try to make it fun. So it'll mix in cool things like this, like can you get Pro Plus installed before you hit the ground when you're skydiving. So all kinds of fun things like that. Check out that series. He does it every couple of weeks. A new edition is being published. So check those out. And then these other tools that I talked through, the deployment tool, dashboard admin, and there's telemetry resource center on TechNet for you to get started with. So thank you guys for sticking around right to the end. So have a great weekend. If not, we'll see you soon.